Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today we are opening up a stack of documents that feels a little bit like a blueprint for the apocalypse.
But in a good way.
In a very optimistic, high-tech way, yeah.
Yeah.
We're looking at this concept of civilization in a box.
It is an incredibly ambitious set of ideas, to put it mildly.
Ambitious is right. I mean, usually when we talk about operating systems, you're thinking Windows, Mac OS, something that, you know, runs your browser.
Manages your files.
Exactly. But today, we're looking at an operating system designed to run an entire rural community. We're talking power grids, logistics drones, identity management.
All running completely offline, without big tech, and without a constant connection to the, you know, the wider internet.
And that's the core promise of the company we're analyzing, right? DRticular.
That's it. They've developed this concept they call RIOS, the Rural Infrastructure Operating System. And the goal is to shift infrastructure from what they call linear fragility to spherical resilience.
Yeah, I want to dig into that phrasing because it pops up everywhere in these source materials. Spherical resilience. It sounds great, but what does it actually mean for, you know, the person just trying to switch their lights on?
Well, think about how the grid works right now. You've got a massive power plant. Maybe a coal or nuclear plant, somewhere way out in the middle of nowhere.
Right.
It pushes electricity down hundreds of miles of transmission lines, a literal line, to get to your house. If a tree falls on that line or a hacker hits that one central plant...
Everyone downstream goes dark.
Everyone. That is linear fragility. It's a domino effect just waiting to happen.
Okay, so the sphere is the alternative to the line.
Right. DRticular is proposing thousands of independent nodes. Each node, which could be a village, a farm, a small factory, it generates its own power, manages its own data, handles its own logistics.
So if the main grid goes down?
These nodes don't care. They just keep humming along in what the documents call island mode.
Island mode. I like that. So you're totally self-sufficient.
Yeah.
But here's the real mystery we're trying to solve today. And it's the main focus of this feasibility study we're reading.
Mm-hmm.
This whole technology relies on a very specific, and I mean very niche, software stack. It's Hyphenet and the new Freenet, also known as Locutus.
Right.
And the big question the report asks is, if I wanted to build this civilization in a box right now, today, is there a Linux OS I can just download that has all this stuff ready to go?
And based on the Kubuntu and Freenet report we've got, the answer is a complicated and kind of frustrating no.
Just a flat no.
Pretty much. There is currently no mainstream Linux distribution that comes pre-installed with this full DRticular suite. You can't just, you know, flash a USB drive and have a Village OS ready to boot.
Well, that's a bit of a buzzkill, but the report doesn't just end there, does it? It points us toward a solution, a kind of Goldilocks operating system that makes building this manually actually possible.
It does. It points directly to Kubuntu.
Okay, so that's our roadmap. We're going to unpack why Kubuntu, out of all the hundreds of Linux versions out there, is the chosen one. We'll look at why the specialized hacker distros like Tails and Mofo Linux actually failed the test.
Which is really interesting.
And then, and this is the part where my brain started to hurt in a good way, we're going to deep dive into what actually happens once you get this system running. We're talking identity polling based on physics.
And sovereign badges. The security model is unlike anything we really use in standard web tech.
Let's start with the what. What are we actually trying to run here? The documents describe a Trinity stack. You've got the heart, the brain, and the soul. Is this just marketing fluff, or is there a real technical distinction?
No, it's a functional distinction. The heart is the hardware. The documents mention waste-to-energy plasma gasification units.
So literally turning trash into electricity to power the node.
Literally. That's the physical engine.
Which is cool, but it's useless without a controller.
Exactly. That's the brain. That's RIS, the operating system. It's an AI-native OS. It's managing the electrons and the data. And then finally, you've got the soul.
The human capital.
The human capital. Yeah. You can't just drop this high-tech machinery into a rural area and walk away. You need people trained to fix it. That's where the DRticular Academy comes in, training what they call sovereign systems architects.
I still want that on a business card. But let's focus on the brain, because that's where the software headache begins. The report mentions a dual-stack approach. Why do they need two different versions of Freenet? Why not just one?
It really comes down to cost and speed. They use Hyphenet, which is the legacy Java-based Freenet, as the static layer.
The static layer.
Yeah, think of that as the hard drive or like the library. It stores things that don't change much.
Yeah.
repair manuals, wikis, medical textbooks. It's permanent censorship-resistant storage.
Okay, so if the internet goes down, you still have, I don't know, Wikipedia and your tractor repair manual saved locally.
Precisely. But Hyphenet is slow. You can't run a real-time power grid on it.
Right.
So they use the new Fernet, which is called Lacutus, as the dynamic layer. Think of this as the RAM. It handles the smart contracts, the energy logging, all the data that changes second by second.
And why Lacutus? Why not something like Ethereum or Solana that people have heard of?
Gas fees. Simple as that. If you are logging a voltage reading every second from 1,000 solar panels and you have to pay a transaction fee for every single entry,
you'd go bankrupt in an hour.
You'd go bankrupt instantly. Lacutus is designed to be feeless for these kinds of high-volume data contracts. It's built for that specific job.
So we have the library, which is Hyphenet, and the ledger, which is Lacutus. Now, I'm putting myself in the shoes of a listener who is, you know, pretty tech savvy.
Yeah.
They want to try this. They want to build a node.
Okay.
We established there's no official Rios ISO to download, so they have to go on a distro hunt.
Right. They need a base Linux system to install this whole stack on top of.
Wow. And I was really surprised by the failures here. I thought for sure MoFo Linux would be the winner. It's built for defeating censorship. It's got that cool name. Why did it fail?
Well, historically, you'd be right. MoFo Linux was the best bet. The report says versions 9.6 and older actually had the Freenet installer preloaded.
Oh, so it was right there.
It was right there. But then version 9.7 came out in February 2026, and the developers made a choice. They removed Freenet.
Stripped it out. Why?
They wanted to save space on the ISO file, the download file. Freenet runs on Java, which is, you know, it's a bit heavy. It takes up space, so they cut it.
Okay, but there's another problem with it, right?
Yeah, there's a bigger issue with MoFo Linux that makes it tough for a civilization in a box. It uses tiling window managers like i3 or DWM.
Okay, explain that for someone who just uses Windows or a Mac. What is a tiling window manager?
Imagine using a computer entirely without a mouse. No clicking X to close a window, no dragging folders around. Everything is controlled by these like complex keyboard shortcuts. You press Mod-Shift-Enter to open a terminal.
It looks like the Matrix code falling down the screen.
It does. And so if I'm a farmer trying to figure out why my solar array is offline, and I have to remember a three-key combo just to open the right menu.
You're gonna have a bad time. It's not user-friendly.
It has a massive, massive learning curve. So for general purpose infrastructure OS, MoFo Linux is just too difficult to use for the average person.
Okay, so that's out. Then we look at Tails. Tails is the gold standard for privacy. Edward Snowden used it. It routes everything through Tor. It seems perfect for an off-grid private node.
It does seem perfect for privacy, but it failed for a really fundamental architectural reason. Tails is amnesic.
It has no memory. It forgets.
Exactly. When you pull the USB stick out or shut down the computer, Tails is designed to wipe the RAM. It forgets everything you did. And this is a safety feature for journalists or activists.
Sure.
But Freenet works by storing a data store on your hard drive. It needs to hold on to encrypted chunks of data to help the network function.
So Freenet needs to remember, and Tails is designed to forget.
They are chemically incompatible.
Yeah.
You can technically force it to work with persistent storage, but it kind of breaks the whole point of using Tails in the first place. So that's out.
Which brings us finally to the recommendation, the Goldilocks solution, Kubuntu. Now, Kubuntu is just Ubuntu with the KDE Plasma desktop. Why is this the winner? Is it just because it looks nice?
Well, the look helps, but it's really about the plumbing underneath. First, stability. Kubuntu is built on Ubuntu, which is built on Debian. That is the bedrock of the Linux world.
Right.
It supports the Java runtime environment, the headless Java, perfectly. And since Hyphenet is a Java program, that stability is completely non-negotiable.
You don't want your power grid crashing because of some weird software update.
Exactly. You want boring. Boring is good for infrastructure, but the interface does matter. KDE Plasma looks remarkably like Windows. You have a start menu in the bottom left, a taskbar, a system tray.
So if you're training someone who has only ever used Windows 10 or 11 to run a decentralized node,
the transition to Kubuntu is way more intuitive. It just lowers that barrier to entry.
Makes sense.
Significantly. And frankly, KDE Plasma is a lot lighter on system resources than the standard Ubuntu desktop, which is GNOME. That leaves more RAM available for the Freenet node itself to use. It's just more efficient.
So Kubuntu provides the stable base, but the report really emphasizes that it's still a manual reality. It's not, you know, plug and play.
No, not at all. The user has to do the legwork. You install Kubuntu LTS,
right,
and you have to open the terminal, they call it console, and install Java. Then you download the FreeNet installer, that JavaJar new installer offline command, and you run it.
So it's not effortless.
Not effortless, but Kubuntu provides the most friction-free environment to build this sovereign stack for yourself.
Okay, so let's say we've done it. We've installed Kubuntu. We've got the dual FreeNet stack running. We have the brain. But a brain in a jar doesn't do anything. It needs to talk to the heart, the physical machinery.
Right.
And this is where the report takes a hard left turn into what really felt like science fiction to me.
This is where we leave standard computing behind and we enter the realm of physics.
The report talks about identity polling. And it starts with a problem I hadn't really thought about before. In the digital world, I can copy-paste a file. I can clone a private key if I manage to hack your computer.
Sure.
But Dereticular is dealing with physical assets, drones, batteries, sensors. How does the software know a device is real and not just some simulation running on a hacker's laptop?
That is the classic Sybil attack problem. If I can pretend to be 1,000 solar panels, I can steal energy credits from the network. Dereticular solution is a hardware root of trust using something called radio frequency fingerprinting, or RFF.
This was my favorite part of the whole report. Walk us through how this actually works.
So every electronic device, whether it's a drone or a simple sensor, has these microscopic imperfections in its circuitry. They just happen during manufacturing. No two chips are ever atom for atom identical.
Okay.
When that device transmits a radio signal, those tiny imperfections create unique distortions in the wave itself.
Like a voice print.
Or a fingerprint.
Exactly like a human fingerprint. The Rios node uses a software-defined radio to listen to the signal. It doesn't just read the data in the signal. It analyzes the shape of the signal. It creates a digital passport based on those unique physics.
So a hacker could steal a password. They could clone the software key.
But they cannot fake the microscopic physical imperfections of that specific radio transmitter unless they physically steal the device itself. It binds the digital identity to the physical object.
That is wild. It's like applying forensics to Wi-Fi signals. But they layer another check on top of that, which I found really clever. The double spend of reality.
This is all about tackling a logic problem using the speed of light. Let's say a hacker does somehow manage to clone a device. They have a curb car. One of their logistics drones in Texas. That's the fake one. And the real one is in Arizona.
Okay, so they try to log into the network with the fake drone in Texas.
The node in Texas checks the radio fingerprint. Let's say it passes. But then the node performs a state lookup on Locutus. It asks the global network, where is this drone?
And the network has a contract that tracks its last known location.
Exactly. If that contract says, this drone was last seen in Arizona 2 minutes ago, and now you're trying to connect in Texas... Well, that's a physics violation.
You can't travel 800 miles in 2 minutes.
You can't. The system flags it as impossible travel, and it locks the account. It uses the basic constraints of reality as a firewall.
That's incredible. You don't just prove you have the right key. You have to prove you are obeying the laws of physics.
Yes.
But wait, so physics and radio fingerprints work great for machines. What about the soul of the stack, the humans? I don't have a radio transmitter embedded in me. How does the network know I'm the admin who's actually authorized to shut down the power plant?
This brings us to the missing piece of the puzzle, provenance. It's not just about who you are, but also how you got there.
The report mentions exit visas, which sounds very, I don't know, bureaucratic for a decentralized system.
It's just a digital chain of custody. When a technician leaves a node, that node issues a signed exit visa. It's a little token that says, user A left node X at 10:00 a.m., when they arrive at the next node, they present that visa.
And the next node checks the travel time.
Exactly. That's the handover protocol. If you show up instantly, the system knows you teleported, which means you're probably using a VPN or spoofing your location. It rejects the connection. It forces the humans to exist in time and space, just like the machines.
Okay, that handles movement. But what about the authority? How do I prove I'm a sovereign systems architect?
This is where they utilize sovereign badges. And I know whenever we hear the word NFT, people kind of roll their eyes because of the bubble a few years ago.
Right. This isn't a picture of a monkey.
No, this is a purely functional use of the technology. It's a soul-bound NFT issued by the Dereticular Academy.
Soul-bound. What does that mean?
It means it cannot be transferred. If you earn the certificate, it sits in your digital wallet and you cannot sell it. You can't trade it. You can't send it to anyone else. It is cryptographically bound to your specific wallet address forever.
So it's a digital diploma that actually functions as a key.
Precisely. When you walk up to a Rios node, maybe it's in a remote village, completely offline, you connect your tablet. The node issues a challenge. Your tablet signs that challenge using the private key associated with your sovereign badge. The machine then verifies it against a local copy of the Academy roster, which is stored on Hyphenate.
So even if the entire internet is down, the machine still knows I'm certified to work on it.
Yes. And for the really dangerous stuff, like a full factory reset of the grid, they have what's called the Four Eyes principle.
Like the two keys for a nuclear launch.
Exactly like that. The system can be configured to require two different sovereign badges from two different wallets to sign the command at the same time. So one rogue employee can't just shut down the whole village. You need consensus.
It's incredible how detailed this architecture is. We really started this just looking for a Linux distro, and we ended up uncovering a system that uses radio wave physics and NFTs to manage power grids.
It really shows the depth of the civilization in a box concept. It's not just about installing some software. It's about recreating the trust structures of society, identity, provenance, authority, without relying on a central government or a big corporation.
So to bring this all back to Earth for our listener, if they want to get their hands dirty with this stuff, what is the final verdict?
The verdict is don't wait for an official dereticular OS ISO. It doesn't exist yet. If you want to touch this future, you download Kubuntu. You install Java. You run the Freenet installer manually. That is your gateway right now.
Kubuntu plus a manual Freenet installation. That's the recipe.
That's the recipe. It's the stable base you need to start experimenting with all these decentralized protocols.
You know, it's funny. We usually think of identity as, what, a username and a password. Maybe two-factor authentication if we're being diligent.
Right.
But dereticular is suggesting something much heavier, much more fundamental.
It is. They're suggesting that true identity isn't just an entry in a database somewhere. It's a combination of physics, where are you physically in the world, and competence. What have you learned and proven?
It makes you wonder. If our current credentials are just entries in a database owned by Google or a government, do we actually own our identity?
That's the provocative thought to leave with. If the internet cables are cut, your Google account disappears, your bank login vanishes. But in the dereticular model, your identity is proven by your physical presence and your cryptographic history. It survives the blackout.
A system that still works when the rest of the world stops. That is definitely something to think about. Thanks for taking the deep dive with us.
Always a pleasure.